buying single-family homes and adding a basement suite, converting to a duplex, and long-term buy and holds.
Are you a real estate investor looking to sharpen your skills, or a newbie looking to become one? You're in the right place. Welcome to Where Should I Invest? Real Estate Investing in Canada with your host, Sarah Larby.
Hey guys, welcome back to Where Should I Invest? All about real estate investing with Sarah Larby. Today's guest, Ryan Kirk, is living in Morocco and is investing in Canada, in Hamilton, Ontario. When you don't think it's possible, think of Ryan. I'm really, really excited to have you guys listen to Ryan's story and his interview on Where Should I Invest? And Ryan has been able to acquire a portfolio of properties while not even being in this country. And he did not let that stop him from working towards achieving his goals. And also, Ryan, not only does he buy and hold properties, but he converts them into duplexes and legal basement suites. So a lot of work, a lot of preparation, a lot of processes go into planning. And I'm really, really excited to have Ryan tell you what he's been able to achieve in the few years that he's been an investor. On another note, we are actually having our 1 year anniversary at the So Right Club. That is, for those of you that may not know, the real estate club that me, Alfonso, and Daniel have created. And March 22nd is actually our 1 year anniversary. I can't believe it's already been a year since we started the club. And I'm really happy to say we are going to have a huge turnout on that day. We had registration open for a few days, 3-4 days, and we're actually completely sold out. There's going to be about 280 attendees that are going to be coming to this event. And Dave Dubow, for those of you that know him, is going to be one of the speakers at the event. So really, really excited to hear him speak. A very well-known investor, author, speaker, and coach. And so super excited to have him be part of our anniversary and being able to share his knowledge with the guests, I think is going to be incredible. So I'm hoping that some of you got a chance to register and are planning on attending. Super exciting. If not, there is going to be another event that we're doing. It's a full day event on the 24th, and then every single month afterwards. So you guys can always check out our So Right Facebook page. It's SOREIT, So Right Club. If you guys search that, you should be able to find some information on it. And also soon we're actually getting our website as well. We figured it's been a year, so we got to take it to the next level and have people being able to learn more about us and search us, not just through Facebook, but to have a website for it, I think is great. So Right, Southern Ontario Real Estate Investing Training Club, that's what it stands for, So Right for short. And so why don't we now get started with the interview with Ryan? And if you guys are overseas and you've got some property in Canada, or you're thinking about getting some property in Canada, listen to Ryan's story. It's definitely really inspiring, and seeing what he's been able to accomplish is amazing. And before we get started with this awesome interview, if you guys could just take a moment to subscribe and rate the podcast, it would be so appreciated. It just allows other people to be able to find the podcast easier. And again, if you want to reach out to me for anything at all, you can also go to my website, saralarby.com, or email me at sarah@saralarby.com. And I know a few of you guys downloaded my ebook, but if you want to know my tenant management strategies, feel free to download. It's a free book on the website, or reach out to me if there's any other questions. And without further ado, let's get on with our interview. Hey guys, welcome back to Where Should I Invest? Real Estate Investing in Canada. I'm here today with Ryan Kirk, all the way in Morocco, and Ryan is going to share how he invests in Canada, being so far away. Welcome, Ryan.
Thanks so much.
Excellent. Really excited to have you on the show today. Can you share with the listeners how you got started in real estate initially?
Initially, I read Rich Dad Poor Dad back in 2004 and instantly bought into the strategy of buying assets. And so when I was considering, should we do stocks, bonds, start businesses, I really gravitated towards real estate.
Excellent. Excellent. So tell us about your first property that you purchased.
The first property was just our primary residence. My wife and I were newly married. And so we bought a condo in Oakville in 2005. And we weren't thinking about it from the perspective of an investment property. It was more just where we thought would be a good place for us to live.
And back in the day, just out of curiosity, how much did you pay for the condo for?
In 2005, for a condo in Glen Abbey, it was $160,000.
Wow. Yeah, you don't get those anymore. I'm actually in Glen Abbey myself. I live in Oakville.
So oh, okay.
Just in my backyard.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, it was just off Third Line.
Awesome. So you bought the first condo, and then what happened?
We moved to Australia in 2006. And so then we decided, rather than selling the condo, we decided to rent it out. And that began kind of our journey as landlords and real estate investors. And so then a few years later, it came time to renew the mortgage, and we paid down some of it, and the prices had appreciated. And so we pulled out some equity. And then in 2010, bought a townhouse in Oakville, and that was our second property.
Awesome. Just out of curiosity, how did you find that first tenant?
That's a good question. That was 2006. I mean, we could have been putting an ad in the Oakville Beaver. I don't even remember, actually. I think it's pre-Kijiji, but I'm not positive.
Okay, that's interesting. And so now you got two properties, and how did you eventually get into Hamilton? Because at some point you ended up changing the strategy, correct?
Right. So we kind of just held that for a long time. And then in 2015, we bought a single family home in Hamilton on the mountain, and we added a basement suite. And once the renovations were completed and we had both units rented, I quickly realized how superior the investment was to what we had going in Oakville. Just because of the cash flow. And so then we decided to sell both those properties in Oakville and kind of put all our eggs in one basket in the strategy of converting to duplexes in Hamilton.
Walk us through the process of a conversion. Like, what do you do from start to finish?
Okay, well, first I'm looking for a property that will work. So there's certain requirements that the city gives about, you know, the frontage, the ceiling height, the size of each unit, kind of the square footage of the property as a whole. And ideally, I'm looking for a place that has a separate side entrance because it just makes it really, really simple to divide it into two units. And then once it's purchased, then you apply to the city and you have to hand in your plans, and they want to look at kind of, yeah, your detailed drawings. You can start renovating upstairs if it needs any work, or you can rent out the upstairs to a tenant that understands that, you know, there's going to be some construction happening over the next little while. Personally, I like to completely separate the units and have separate laundry. So I find a place upstairs where you can put stackable washer and dryer, do any upgrades you need. And then once your permits are approved, you can kind of move forward with the basement. So what we've done is put two bed, one bath, suites in the basements.
So were you doing this when you were still local?
No, actually, we've lived overseas ever since 2006. I mean, we've spent a little bit of time in Canada here and there with visits, but all these renovations have taken place while we've lived abroad.
Walk us through that process, because for me, my properties are 40 minutes away and I have an opportunity to go and check on the work that's being done, but you're miles and miles and hours away. So how does that even work?
Yeah, well, it is a leap of faith, but I think it's been a real gradual progression. So started out by renting our primary residence. And then in 2010 was the first time we purchased a property without actually seeing it. You know, it was sight unseen, trusting my realtor, and I think I had my sister go and look at it. And so that was a big step. But then in 2015, we bought a place that actually I had seen it, but then I wasn't there for any of the renovations. And I think the key is that my property manager is also my father-in-law. So it's someone that I trust and that I have a close relationship with, and we communicate very, 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 very consistently. And so that allows me to know that it's in good hands, and also to stay on top of what's going on. You know, we're talking almost every day, or he's sending me photos and updates, and I can communicate directly with the contractor or through the property manager. There's that option. So you're able to really keep close tabs on how the project is progressing.
Yeah, it's really interesting. I'm sure it helps to have people that you trust in person overseeing everything.
Yeah, definitely. There are little things that require somebody to be on the ground. And so it could be, you could deal directly with the contractor and have the contractor be someone that you trust. But it just depends on the contractor's willingness to do some of the extra things, like purchasing appliances, for example. You know, when you're doing a new basement suite and you're adding stackable laundry upstairs, you might need to purchase 7 appliances. And so that's something where you want to be really involved. You want to look for deals. You want to get good prices. And not all contractors are interested in shopping around or choosing tiles or flooring options. They're happy to install it, but maybe don't want to be involved in the selection process. So you need somebody to help with those things.
So if you didn't have your father-in-law, do you think you would have been able to get to where you are today? Like if somebody doesn't have a family member, like what should they do to be successful like you?
I think I would look for a partner, somebody who could be on the ground. Once you have a property that's up and running, then you can do it with just any property manager. Doing an extensive renovation, it requires a lot more hands-on involvement. And so I think it's good to have somebody that's on your side, who's boots on the ground. So maybe if I didn't have anybody at all, I might look at just purchasing a turnkey investment, you know, someone like me that's already put one together and then puts it up for sale. So you can buy it, you know, it's going to cash flow, and then you just hire a property manager. So it's a lot easier to manage.
Are you self-managing or do you have a property manager right now?
My father-in-law manages the properties on an ongoing basis.
Okay.
So we work hand in hand. So for example, with placing a new tenant, I'm the one who does all the advertising. So I'll place the ads on Kijiji and I'll do the initial filtering of tenants. And then once there's somebody that has good potential and we're willing to show the place, then I'll pass them on to my property manager and he'll organize the showing. And then we'll discuss together. He'll receive applications. I'll look at all their files and their paperwork. He'll give me his personal impression from meeting them face to face, and we'll make a decision, and he'll be the one that kind of does the giving of the keys and signing of the lease and all that.
So you mentioned screening and posting and advertising, and I'm a big proponent of that as well. What are some of the techniques or the processes that you do or that you use to screen out tenants?
Yeah, I'm a big fan of it, a big proponent of it, I guess, because we're living abroad, you know, I really need to be somewhat passive and can't deal with a lot of tenant hassles. And so that's why we're not doing things like student rentals. That's why our properties are all quite nice and we renovate them to a high standard, because we want to attract low maintenance tenants that will take good care of the place. And so the filtering process is hugely important. We had a tenant that we needed to evict in 2011, and it's majorly stressful. It's a big headache. It's a big expense. You definitely want to avoid it at all costs. So we place ads on Kijiji and people write back. And then I have a whole list of questions that I'll send, not too many, but a handful. And then if they can't answer those questions, or, you know, if they can't write back and provide sort of solid information, then that's it. I don't bother following up with them or chasing them down. And I try to keep the prices somewhat below market value, you know, a little bit lower than we probably could get, because I want to have a large pool of interested people to select from, so we can kind of choose, get the cream of the crop. And then, yeah, we're asking for employment letters and credit checks and references. We call all the references. I usually snoop around on social media and try to find what people are up to and kind of verify their job on LinkedIn, or look to see if I can find them on Facebook or Instagram, those kinds of things, just to get a better feel for who they are and what their lifestyle is. Particularly when you're doing up-down duplexes, you know, you really want to try to match tenants' lifestyles. We just had an issue where a nurse living in a basement, she works night shifts, and then there's a young kid that lives upstairs. And so the nurse is trying to sleep at 10 a.m. and the kid is stomping around. Even though we do soundproofing, we do resilient channel, we do as much as we can, it's still not 100%, and it still is really inconvenient for her, and it's not going to work out long term for her to live there.
Yeah, I mean, making sure that the tenants are within the same type of profile, I think, is really important. You said some really great things about social media checking, and something I'm a big believer in doing, making sure that everything does check out. One of the things that I started doing recently is actually I have a paralegal in the city that I invest in. And before I give the keys to anyone, as I'm doing the checking, I actually call her and say, hey, are these people in your book? Or do you know of them? Because
yeah, that's all good.
I'm in the courtroom. So just a little extra tip to, you know, make sure that you're giving the keys to the right person. So you mentioned also you had to go to the landlord tenant board to evict a tenant. And obviously this kind of stuff does happen, and being remote, how did you go through that and handle it being so far away?
Yeah, I mean, my property manager took care of all of that. And so there was, you know, different paperwork that I needed to get to him, but he's able to represent an absentee landlord. That's not an issue at all. And so he had to be there to be at the different tribunals and represent us, but he took care of everything and it worked out. I was the one that was kind of trying to do as much research as possible to figure out what's the process, what's the papers that we need to file, what needs to be, you know, delivered to her door on this date, that kind of thing. But he was the one that went and made the court appearances.
Being in Morocco and investing in Canada, I'm sure there is some things that people should be aware of, taxes and financing, and not, you know, I know you're not a tax or accountant or a lawyer or anything like that, but what are some of the things that you can share with us on how all that works?
The main thing is I've maintained my residential ties with Canada. So it is possible that I could reduce my tax bill in Canada if I cut ties. But because of my real estate business and my plans to return to Canada eventually, I'm still a factual resident there. So basically, for a bank in Canada, they don't view me as a Moroccan doing some work in Canada. They view me as a Canadian who's doing some work in Morocco, which is true. So I still operate in many ways like a Canadian. I still have, you know, bank accounts and credit cards and a driver's license and a mailing address. And that allows me to qualify for mortgages in Canada.
So when you are looking at mortgages, your mortgage agent, mortgage broker is in Canada, your lawyer's in Canada, or do you have any dealings with any Moroccan lawyers or anything like that that deal with Canada?
The only thing I have is a lawyer here in Casablanca that sometimes there's different paperwork, identity verification things that it requires somebody who's like a, you know, legal trustee or whatever it is. You need to have it signed in front of. So there's a guy here that is happy to stamp things and sign paperwork for me. But other than that, yeah, it's all in Canada. I don't have anybody here that I deal with related to that.
Okay, excellent. So what about Morocco? Are you interested in buying any properties there?
No, I'm only planning to invest in Canada. I'm a foreigner here in Morocco, so I'm a guest in this country. And it just really ups the risk profile. That means you don't really know what's going to happen in the future. There could be political changes. There could be changes within my family that require us to return to Canada. There could be changes related to my career that require us to return. We don't know how long we're going to be here. Plus, the legal and banking system here is a lot less developed, which I think limits my options and lowers my confidence. And I really can't see how you can cash flow here unless you were doing Airbnb with tourists. And that's just not passive enough for what I'm looking for. So Canada is such a stable country. The economic fundamentals give me a lot of confidence for the future. So I'm happy keeping all my eggs in that basket.
Okay, awesome. Thanks for sharing that. So what are, you know, your top two or three challenges of being remote and investing in Canada? Like, what, if you look back at the last few years, what has been your top three challenges? And then maybe one or two things that you want to share as a tip.
Okay, well, I guess one of the upsides, or one of the pros of investing from afar, is that it forces you to work on high level tasks, forces you to work on the business rather than in the business. When your investments are right in your backyard, it can be tempting to kind of rush in and save the day or do things yourself when there's a problem, rather than delegating that and focusing on ways to scale your business. So, you know, last summer, for example, I was visiting Canada. We had a renovation project on the go, and I thought, oh, I'm going to go see what's happening. I never really get a chance to see them in action, so I'll go drop in and maybe get a little bit involved. It'll be fun. I ended up spending 8 hours there. You know, I was making a couple trips to Home Depot, installing blinds, just doing all sorts of little tasks around the house. And it was great. You know, I learned some things. I was able to push the project forward. I'm sure I boosted morale, but there's nobody paying me for my time. You know, I could have put that time into things that were of higher value, like meeting with potential investors to line up the next property. So one of the upsides of being far away is that it removes that temptation to do tasks that really should be delegated or passed on. But definitely one of the downsides of investing from a distance is it's very difficult to network. So I listen to a ton of podcasts and hear about all the great events that are going on, and I really wish I could be part of them. I really wish I could rub shoulders with other investors that are doing amazing things, learn from them, be inspired by them. And I'd love to be able to meet more potential investors to share what I'm up to and to try to find more joint ventures. When I was visiting last summer, I went to one of Irwin's events at Rockstar Real Estate, and, you know, went to a couple of classes, was learning a bunch of stuff, meeting other people. We went and did a property tour, and yeah, I was geeking out with all these other investors that kind of speak the same language that I do and are really into stuff like this. And I was able to share some of my knowledge, pass on what I'm learning. Yeah, it's just a lot harder to meet people like that and to build trust with money partners from a distance.
So you mentioned joint ventures. Is that the next step for you?
Yeah, definitely. I want to keep going. This is a fantastic strategy. It's a really, really solid investment that creates great returns. And I enjoy it, and I have the experience and the systems and the team in place to keep progressing, to keep growing. But I need people who have finances and are happy to invest passively and are looking for someone like me to make a deal happen. So that's definitely the next step.
Okay, so you still want to be that active partner in the joint venture despite being in Morocco because you're already set up.
Yeah, yeah. I've got the team in place and can easily make it happen even from a distance. It adjusts what my role is, but based on the partnerships I've developed, it's not an issue.
Excellent. And are you still looking at Hamilton in particular?
Yeah. Yeah, I am. I think the economic fundamentals are really solid there. The numbers really work. And I know you could do the same thing kind of moving out east or going north. But this is the area that I'm from. That's definitely gives me some insider knowledge. I went to Mac. I lived in Ancaster for years. I have a large network there, which helps shortcut the team building process. And also it's close to where my property manager lives. So if I was to buy in Windsor or even St. Catharines, you know, which I've considered, it most likely means using a different property manager, which I prefer to avoid.
Okay, that's excellent. And Hamilton, actually, I was just at Acre this past weekend, Don Campbell's Green Group, and Hamilton is voted the third best city to invest in for the next 5 years.
Oh, that's fantastic. What were number one and two?
So number one was Ottawa, number two, Kitchener, Waterloo, Cambridge.
Okay.
And then Hamilton, three, number four was Barrie, five, Brampton, six, Durham Region, seven was Toronto, eight, Kingston, nine, Orillia, and then number 10 was Grimsby and St. Catharines.
Okay, Grimsby and St. Catharines made the list. Okay, I was wondering. This is for Ontario, right?
This is for Ontario, correct, yes. So it doesn't include BC or Alberta or any of that. But you can see that southwestern Ontario is really growing and has a lot of opportunities.
Yeah.
So walk me through some of the goals that you have. What does the next 5 years look like for you?
Well, I'm planning on staying in Morocco for up to 8 years. And so I'd like to just continue growing my portfolio at kind of a medium pace, I guess, just doing about 2 to 3 properties a year. And at this point, sticking with the same strategy, buying single family homes and adding a basement suite, converting to a duplex, and long-term buy and holds. That's the strategy that's working great for me, and it fits with my long-term goals. And it's something that works even despite me living overseas. So that's what I plan on continuing with.
Just out of curiosity, what is it that you do for work that brought you to Morocco?
I'm working for Franklin Covey. They're a consulting firm. And I teach a course called The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People, and in corporate settings, but also on a lot of university campuses. So I work with a lot of students on a few different campuses here in Casa and in a neighboring city called Rabat.
Wow, that's very impressive. So can you share some of these habits? Any insights?
Yeah, one of the most important is the first habit, which is be proactive. And it just comes back to your mindset and your attitude that, yeah, you don't determine kind of the cards that you're dealt in life, but you determine what actions you take. You determine what the next steps are. So rather than kind of pointing the finger or, you know, to apply it to real estate investing, rather than saying, oh, you know, the interest rates or the new stress tests or the prices have gotten too high, whatever you could point the finger at, the LRT hasn't started yet, these kinds of things, those are things that are outside of our control, and we need to focus on what we can control. And another habit is think win-win. And this really applies to your team and the people that you work with. You know, when you're buying a real estate piece of property, you want to make sure that you choose a price that works for both you and for the seller. Same thing when you're hiring a contractor, you know that they need to make profit, they need to do well, and you need to do well. And so you're looking for prices that are a win-win or situations that are a win-win. You want to, sometimes that means leaving money on the table, sometimes that means being creative in how you work out a deal. But you, in order to build strong relationships in the long run, it needs to be a win for both sides.
Amazing. Thank you so much for sharing those insights. And then if anybody has any more questions about that, I'm sure they'll be able to reach out to you.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Are you ready for the lightning round questions?
Yeah, for sure.
Okay, awesome. So this is a series of 5 questions, and answer them. First answer that comes to your mind. Number one, what is your favorite real estate investing book ever?
It's a book called The 7 Steps to Wealth by John Fitzgerald. I took it out of the library in Australia back in 2007. And it's just a really simple book that lays out a plan to buy a property, manage it well, and then refinance and use it to buy another, and just basically slowly over time build your portfolio. Now, it was written pre-2008, so it was talking about, you know, buying properties with no money down and things like that. You need to adjust what it said, but it gave me a vision for how real estate is a great vehicle to grow wealth in the long run.
Excellent.
Number two, what is your favorite podcast?
I listen to a ton of podcasts. Bigger Pockets is probably my favorite one. I love Breakthrough Real Estate Investing. I listen to Irwin's podcast, The Truth About Real Estate Investing. I think that's how I learned about your podcast. I'm enjoying the new Your Life, Your Terms podcast. Mm-hmm. And I also like The Side Hustle Show, Mad Scientist, Smart Passive Income with Pat Flynn. I like digital marketing and online business stuff too. So,
awesome. Those are all really great podcasts. I've been binge listening to Pat Flynn's the past few days, and it's really good.
Yeah, he's got so much material. It's really quality.
So what do you do for fun when you're not doing real estate?
One of the things I'm doing regularly is I play hockey here in Morocco, actually.
Wow.
We only have two ice rinks in the country, but one of them's not too far from my house. So, I mean, it's not regulation size. There's no lines on the ice. There's no glass. But we've got a team, and I try to get out there every week. And I spend time with my family. I love to travel, run, snowboard. Yeah.
Excellent. Question number four. If you lost all your money and assets tomorrow, how would you start again?
I think I would do the same thing I did the last deal, which is a joint venture partnership where I didn't put in any of the money, but I was able to bring the experience, the knowledge, the systems, and the team, and then do all the active legwork to make the deal happen in exchange for a share of the long-term proceeds.
Perfect. And number five, if somebody has $50,000 and they want to get started, how would you recommend that they spend it?
I'd recommend they do a joint venture with somebody that isn't just willing to do the deal and be the active investor, but someone who's willing to act as a coach, someone who's willing to sort of share their insights as they go through the process, the acquisition, the renovations, tenant screening, ongoing management, how to do financing. You'd make a great return on the $50,000, but you'd also gain a lot more just from the knowledge, and that would help you going forward.
So just a couple last questions. Where can listeners find you if they would like to reach out to you and learn more about you?
You can find me on LinkedIn. I have a profile on Bigger Pockets, or I have a Facebook page called Gemma Key Real Estate Wealth.
How do you spell that?
It's G-E-M-A-K-I.
Okay. Any last words of advice? Anything else that you'd like to let the listeners know?
Yeah, I guess I just want to say that it's surprising what's possible nowadays with technology and all that's available online. We're living in the information age, and you can accomplish a lot more than was possible even 5 years ago. And so if you live in a market, if you live downtown Toronto and you can't imagine driving up to St. Catharines to take care of a property or even just to spend a day looking at a property, it's possible to invest without having to set foot in the property. You just need to find the right people and someone that you can trust and partner with, someone that has kind of the other side of things that you bring to the table, and that's a good fit and can create win-win solutions.
Amazing. So on that note, thanks very much, Ryan, for coming on Where Should I Invest?
Thanks so much.
Thanks so much for listening to Where Should I Invest with your host, Sarah Larby. Make sure to listen in next time. We'll catch you on the next episode of Where Should I Invest?